Invited by Rabbi Yaakov May and Rabbi Chaim Eli Welcher to come to speak to all of you just a few weeks, less than 2 weeks before Shavuos, during Yemei HaSfira. And of course it's sponsored by Tiferes Moshe, that I personally have a tremendous amount of Hakaras HaTov. Both my sons, Avram Zelik and Eliezer, both went to Tiferes Moshe right from the beginning. They went through 8 years and then continued on, and Baruch Hashem, you should have nachas from them as I have. You should have nachas from yours as I have nachas from them. And their start they got in Tiferes Moshe with the greatest rebbes and the greatest principals. And I have always a tremendous sense of Hakaras HaTov to this wonderful, wonderful yeshiva. We've come together at a very, very special time of the year. We've come together at a time of growth, a time of elevation, a time when Klal Yisrael, all of you know, when they left Mitzrayim, they were so low, they were at Mem Tes Sharei Tuma. They were at the lowest level of Tuma and impurity. And somehow, within 7 weeks, they were able to go from that low level of Tuma to be able to be Makabel the Torah and to go to Har Sinai and receive the Luchais from Moshe Rabbeinu, and of course to hear the first two Luchais from Hashem himself. And so therefore, because these are days of elevation, and these are days when we're striving to get higher, that's why I always say that it's not only a question of counting the days, but making every day count. Now, I want to begin by telling you a very, very interesting story. But before I tell you the story, I just want to thank TorahAnytime.com. Without exaggeration, it is one of the greatest organizations in Klal Yisrael. Within 24 hours, everything that we say here will be available in Australia, in Chile, in Mexico, in Switzerland, in England, Eretz Yisrael. It is incredible. I myself listened to so many of the shiurim on TorahAnytime.com, and I thank them wherever they go. They're recording and making sure that Klal Yisrael has Torah and inspiration. Many of you know that I have the great schus to travel to many places where Yiddishkeit flourished. And I've taken over the years more than 1,000 people to various places. One of the most moving places that we go to is in Poland. And the first day of the trip in Poland, when we are in Warsaw, we go to the kever of the first Ger Rebbe, that was the Chiddush Erim, and the second one, the Sfas Emes, that are buried right next to each other. Now, the Sfas Emes died at a very young age. Now, all the boys here are going to think, oh, come on, that's not a young age. 58. 58 is an old man, right? But all of us without T-shirts here know that 58 is not an old man. But whatever, at the funeral of the Sfas Emes, his son, Avram Mordechai, who would become the next Ger Rebbe, the Imre Emes, the Imre Emes said to his brother, well, at least our father had Arichas Yomim. Arichas Yomim means longevity. So the brother said, that's what you call Arichas Yomim? 58? 58 is not old. That's not having Arichas Yomim. So the Imre Emes, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai, said something ingenious. He said, I didn't say that our father had Arichas Shonim. I said that he had Arichas Yomim. There's a great difference between Arichas Shonim and Arichas Yomim. Arichas Shonim means length of years, 80, 90, 100. No one, no Rav, no doctor, no one can guarantee for themselves Arichas Shonim. Nobody knows what tomorrow brings. But every single one of us, every man, woman, and child here in Rabbi Walser Shul in Kew Garden Hills, and that will be listening throughout the world, every one of us can guarantee that we will have Arichas Yomim. You know what Arichas Yomim means? Length of days, making every day count. Making sure that every day you've done something special. And we're going to talk about what special things we should be doing every day. But that's what the Imre Emes meant about his father, the Sfas Emes. Of course, he only lived to be 58 years old. But every day counted. Now I want to tell you something that's a little painful to listen to, But it's so beautiful and it's so special. Over the last number of years, I had the great zchus many, many times to speak on the same program as Rebbetzin Jungreis. And we became very, very friendly. I used to call her the Bubby of Klal Yisrael, and she loved when I introduced her that way. So when you listen to many of her speeches, you begin to realize she always spoke about her family. And one of the people she always spoke about was her husband, who she loved very, very dearly. But tragically, he passed away, a relatively young man. And she had a very good relationship with him. And she was so broken when he passed away that for weeks afterwards, she couldn't even pick up his svarim where he had notes. She couldn't even pick up his notebooks where he had written certain things. It was too painful for her. And then one night, her daughter picked up a note that Rabbi Jungreis, Alav Shalom, had written. And she said, "Ma, take a look at this note. Look what Abba wrote." And it was so incredible that Rebbetzin Jungreis wrote about it afterwards. She said she felt that this was a note that he somehow felt that one day she would see this and this would help her go on with life. And listen what the note said. The note said, "A long life is not good enough, but a good life is long enough." Think about that. That's amazing. A long life is not good enough. Just because somebody lives to be 80 or 90 years old, if he hasn't accomplished or she hasn't accomplished, that's nothing. Fine, so they existed and they breathed for 90 years. But a good life is long enough. And that's what we've come to talk about. To make every single day count, especially as we do this in the Yemei HaSfira. You know, I want to ask you a question. I'm sure that many of you have thought about this, and I'm going to tell you two answers. And if any of the boys or anybody wants to take a guess at the answer, I'll give you a free CD. You ever wonder why we don't say Shechiyana when we start counting Sfira? Every mitzvah that we do every once in a while, like matzah, shofar, lulav, sukkah, we all say Shechiyana. How come we don't say Shechiyana? You know, when, okay, good, Rabbi Shechter, what do you think? Well, that's part of it. It's a very good answer. He's saying, Rabbi Shechter's saying, future Rabbi Shechter, what he's saying is that because there's some sadness during Sfira, because of the Talmidim that died. But that happened later on. But okay, that's a good answer. I'll give you a CD. Don't worry, I'm not cheap. And besides, you're my neighbor. But okay. But, yeah, go ahead. So therefore what? Good, you're right. You say it out loud, Rabbi Kiffel. Good, what? We don't bring the carbon oimer, and therefore we say al sfira sa oimer. That's the ran im sochem. That's the last ran im sochem. If you open up the Gemara backwards and you take a look at the ran says the only time you say shechiyanu is when there's total happiness. That's why, by the way, I'm a little embarrassed to tell you, but that's why, by the way, we don't say a shechiyanu by a bris. You know why? Because the baby's crying. The baby's crying a little bit, so there's a little sadness, so we don't say shechiyanu. But, so the Ran is saying what Rabbi Kiffel said, Rabbi Kiffel Jr., right? What he's saying is that because there's a tinge of sadness, because we're saying, al sfira sa oimer, and we're thinking about the carbon oimer, which we can't bring because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore, that's why we don't say Shechiyanu. So you know what I thought of? Because of what you said, and because of what the Ran said, right? I've seen this a long time ago. It occurred to me, what are the very first words we say after we start counting Sfira? Who can say? Which boy can tell me? The second you, go ahead. The second you finish Sfira, what do you say? What? Yeah, what's the Rachman? Say it out loud. Rachman? Hashem returned the avoid of the Beis. How does that fit there? So in my humble opinion, this is the reason. Because the Ran, Rabbi Kiffel said, because there's sadness, because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. So the second you count Sfira, HaRachman, HaYarzalon, it's avoid, it's Beis HaMikdash. What's your name? I'm sorry? Okay, Nachman Avreich from Milwaukee? Yeah, Chavetz Chaim is doing a good job. Okay, very good. Okay, fine, that's one. Now here's another teretz. The Bnei Yisoscha tells us a different teretz why there's no Shechiyanu. And you know what he says? Because it's not important the days that you're counting. Every day you're growing. And then eventually, when you get to Shavuos and you reach the zenith, you reach the high point, that's when you're going to say Shehecheyanu. So totally two different terutzim. The Ran, Emsachem, and Rabbi Kiffel say, because they're sadness. But the Bnei Yisrael says a different teretz altogether. The Bnei Yisrael says, you know why? Because we got to count and higher and higher and higher. And then, when we get to Shavuos, that's when we say Shehecheyanu. So if that's the case, there are a lot of things that we can learn from the days of Sfira. And I want to tell you a lesson that struck me that maybe you never thought about it this way. And I think it's a very, very important lesson in life. Okay, this is only for the boys. Who knows? How many Talmidim did Rabbi Akiva lose? Very good. 24,000. And what's your name? I'm sorry? Tovia. Good. But that's Moshe Rabbeinu's name was Tovia. Very good. So 24,000 Talmidim. Does anybody know in how many days they died? What period of day? How many days? Yes. I'm sorry? 33. What's your name? Aryeh. Aryeh. Gevaldik. Have Hashem's name in your name. Great. 33, right? Isn't that amazing? Now, did you ever do the math? I don't know if you ever did the math. Imagine you were Rabbi Akiva. Think about it for a second. You're the Rebbe, and 24,000 Talmidim are dying within a period of 33 days. You know what that averages? 727. What would you do if you were the Rebbe? Just picture Rabbi Akiva. They call him up, right, on the first day of Sfira, or let's say the second day, right, when he can start traveling. They say, Rebbe, you got to come to Haifa. You got to give a hesped. That Talmud, that new Shas, he just died. He finishes the hesped in Haifa. He said, Rebbe, you got to go to Tel Aviv. That Talmud, that's a Ben Yochid. You loved him. You got to go. He finishes in Tel Aviv. Rebbe, you got to go to Ashkelon. You got to go to Ashdod. This one just had a baby. This one just got engaged. We would go crazy. Any of us would go out of our minds if 727 Talmidim would die every day. You know what we would say? Okay, Hashem, I get it. I'm not going to teach Torah. You don't like me. You don't like my Talmidim. I'm out of here. I'll get another job. I won't teach Torah. Most of us would say that, right? You know what Rabbi Akiva did? He said, you know what? I got to get 5 new Talmidim, and I'm going to tell them. You know what the Medrash says? It's unbelievable. He says, Rabbi said, we made a mistake. We taught these Talmidim Torah, but we did not teach them Midos. We did not teach them that they have to give covered one to the other. That was a big mistake. We were stressing things, but that was not enough. Let's start all over again. And he starts all over, and the Medrash tells us, Umalu kol Eretz Yisrael Torah. Could you believe it? He taught Talmidim, and they taught other Talmidim, they taught other Talmidim, till the whole Eretz Yisrael was filled with Torah. What do we learn from this? You know what we learn? That no matter what happens to you in your life, you never be broken. You can be discouraged. I'm sure that Rabbi Akiva was very discouraged, but he wasn't broken. A broken person says, okay, I'm out of here. I can't do it. I'm going to get somebody else. That's not what Rabbi Akiva said. That, to me, is one of the most important lessons in life, because we all go through challenges. Now, those sweet little boys here can't imagine, but we as adults know that nobody gets away scot-free. That's what Golus is about. There are challenges, there are conflicts, there are turmoils. But a Yid never gets broken. A Yid could be discouraged. Eina Chanami. That's what happened with Rabbi Akiva. He surely was discouraged. And he was surely sad. And he surely cried. But he said, we got to build. That's the first lesson. You build. And that's what the first lesson of growth in the Yemei HaSfira is. That we never, ever give up. And I'll tell you another thing. I don't know if any of the boys know this, but many of the adults certainly remember this from the last Gemara in Makkos and the last Daf. Some of you will remember that Rabbi Akiva was walking with different Tanoim, and there was a fox. Does anybody know where that fox was walking? Where, Tzadik? Oh, you should be benched. What's your name? Shmuel Gevaldik. Shmuel's right. The fox was walking at the place in the Kodesh Kadoshim. And the other Tanoim who saw it, they started crying. And Rabbi Akiva was laughing. So they say, Rabbi Akiva, what are you laughing? This is so sad. This is the place where the Kohen Gadol used to go. A fox is walking around here. What a bazillion. What an embarrassment. And he says, what are you guys crying about? This is something to laugh about. Laugh? What are you laughing? He says, you know why? Because the Navi predicted certain things. The Navi predicted that the Churban was going to happen. But you know what the Navi also said? And we made a song out of this. That, oh, Yeshvu Zakenu, Zakenu, Zberachavis, Yerushalayim, they're going to be old men and old people. They're going to be walking around in Yerushalayim. And they're going to be little boys and little girls. Yeladim v'yeladim, Mesachkim v'chavis, that's going to be a big bungalow colony. All the little boys and little girls are going to be running around Yerushalayim. So if the first thing came true, the second thing is also going to come true. I'm thrilled. I can't wait. So Rabbi Akiva's positive. That's what we learn from Rabbi Akiva. We know that he started late and he lost the Talmidim, but he started over again. A Yid can be discouraged, but Chas v'shalom, never to be broken. Now, I don't know if you ever thought about this. Why are there 49 days in the Sfira? Where does that number come from, 49? What's wrong with 39? What's wrong with 29? What's wrong with 59? Where does 49 come from? That what? Wow, that's a good terrace. That's not the terrace I was going to say, but boy, you deserve two CDs. You're going to make me bankrupt. But okay, you're right. I'll give you anything you want. He's right. That's one of it. What? And if, yeah, go ahead. What?
After 49 days, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai died.
After 49 days, he died? I don't know if it was after 49 days. Maybe. But okay, let me tell you what a very interesting terrace that the B'nai Yisoscha says. Don't worry, I'll give you a CD anyway. But, well, okay, yeah, go ahead. What's Sadik?
49 comes, they reached the 49 levels of
Tshuva. Of Tahara, because they went up. That's what he was saying. Very good. You're right. But let me just tell you an amazing thing. Get a pencil and paper. You won't believe this. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was sitting with his Talmidim. And he said to the Talmidim, tell me what is the best midah that every Yid should have. Tell me that character trait that every Yid should have. So, one Talmud says, Rebbe, everybody has to have a good eye. Don't be jealous. There's some people have more money than you. Some people have more nachas than you. Some people have a fancy. Be happy for everybody. Have a good eye. Another one said, Rebbe, I think everybody should be a good friend. We all have so many acquaintances, but we need a good friend. And then finally, Rebbe Elazar ben Aruch said, Rebbe, I believe everybody should have a lev toiv. Oh, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai heard that, a good heart. He said, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, you are so right, because no matter what everybody says, it's all included in a good heart. Now watch this. You won't believe it, what the B'nai Yisoscha says. How much is lev equal to? No, lev? 32. Lev is 32. How much is toiv? 17. How much is 32 and 17? Hey, there you go. Isn't that amazing? That's what he says. That's why it's 49. Because we have to gain a lev toiv in these 49 days of Sfira. It's incredible. And then he brings, that's the pshat derech eretz, kodmo l'toira. When a person has a lev toiv, they're learning derech eretz, they're learning concern for other people. And so therefore, that's what a lev toiv is. That's what the days of Sfira. That's how we climb higher and higher. And once we have the derech eretz, then we can be makabel the Torah. So I hope you don't mind I take a drink of water, because it's always good to drink when you're speaking. And I want to tell you that one time I got in trouble for doing this. You know when I got in trouble? The first time I filmed the video for Chavetz Chaim for Tisha B'Av. You see? See what happened was, we were filming 3 weeks in advance. In the middle of the video, right? I'm going strong in the speech, and all of a sudden Michael Rothschild, who runs this thing, he says, hey, wait a second, we got to record this over again. I said, what did I say wrong? He said, no, you're drinking. And they're showing this on Tisha B'Av. So, you know, anybody who's watching, you know. But anyway, so now I want to tell you a great story about Lev Toiv. You won't believe this. And the reason that I want to tell you this story is because I think that the people in Queens, they should be moichel me out there in the whole world. The people in Queens are the best people in the whole world. the greatest neighborhoods in the world. Of course, I say Kew Gardens, but I know I'm in Kew Garden Hills, Forest Hills, Hillcrest. It's all the same. But I just want to tell you something that happened to me. Now, I'm just trying to think who knows me since I'm a little boy. I mean, I knew Rabbi Kassir al-Shalom, you know, for many, many years. And the Chaits, I knew many, many years. But when I was 21, some of you may not know this, my father passed away. And I had to become a moel. I was learning Mila before from my father. But unfortunately, he had Yena Machla. I was all of 21. And he passed away. And I had to leave the yeshiva. And I supported my mother and my six younger brothers and sisters. I walked down all my brothers and sisters to their weddings together with my mother. Now, when you're 21, there are many people that don't want to take you as a moel. Because really, you're a kid. So sometimes I would walk into a house and a grandmother would take a look at me and say, "Ooh, you look so young." I would say, "Well, the baby's also young." try to break the ice a little bit. So there was a fellow in our shul, Mr. Chaim Israel, he davened in Rav Teitelbaum shul. He should have a litzika gan eden. He davened with Herman Koenigsberg, of course. And he comes over to me one time. This is 1967. My father passed away, Shemini Atzeres, 1966. So this is like January 67. He comes over to me and he says, "Here, I have something for you." And he gives me $1,500. So I say, "Mr. Israel, thank you, but you know, we're not poor. You know, we don't need charity." He said, "Nah, this is not charity. This is a loan." I said, "A loan? So when do I pay you back?" He said, "I will never ask you for it. Whenever you want, you can pay me back." I said, "Look, you know, I can't take this money. You know, I wasn't married at the time. I was living at home. So I said, you know, if my mother wants to accept the money, so fine, good, I'll take it. But I have to ask her." I come home. I say, "Ma, you know, Mr. Israel gave us money, $1,500. She says, "Well, we're not beggars. We're not poor. We don't need the money." I said, "Ma, that's what I told him. He said it's a loan." So she said, "When do we pay it back?" She said, "He'll never ask us. Whenever we want." Okay. So we took the money on those conditions. 2 years later, I was already 23. More and more people were taking me. I put together the money. And I go to the Queens Boulevard office of Mr. Israel. I say, "Here's the $1,500. We're very, very grateful. We really did need the money. And we'd like to return it." He says, "Well, I'm not taking it." I said, "What do you mean you're not taking it? You said that it was a loan, right? So I want to pay." He says, "Sit down. I want to tell you a story." He says, "Do you remember?" He's talking about himself. He says, "Do you remember when I went bankrupt a number of years ago?" Now, of course I remember. The whole shul was so stunned because he was one of the wealthiest men in shul. And Nebuchadnezzar had made, obviously, some bad investments. And now he lost all his money. He said, "A few weeks after I went bankrupt, there was another man in our neighborhood, Mr. Lewinstein. And he came over to me and he gave me money. And I said to him what you said to me. I don't need the money. I'm not poor." And he said, "No, this is not a stalker. This is a loan." So I said to him what you said to me. "What do you mean a loan? When do I pay it back?" He said, "I'll never ask you. Whenever you want, you can pay back." Fine. A couple years later, I went to pay Mr. Lowenstein, and he said, "I'm not taking it." So I said to him, "What do you mean you're not taking it? You said it's a loan, and I'm ready to pay it." He said, "It is a loan." So I said, "Okay, it's a loan. I'm ready to pay." "No, you don't pay me. You're going to find another family that needs the money, and you give it to them. That's how you pay me back. And when they come to pay you, that's what you're going to tell them. They should pay it to another family." And that's exactly what my mother and I did. Another family a year later needed the money. We knew they needed it, and we gave it to them. We told them it's a loan. And then when they came back to pay, we told them they should carry it on and pay it to somebody else. That's a lev toiv. That's somebody with sensitivity. I'll tell you a great story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who was the Gadol HaDor in Eretz Yisrael. 500,000 people came to his levaya. 500,000 people came not only because he was a great Talmud Chacham, but you have never ever seen a picture of Rav Shlomo Zalman without this radiant smile. He was the kindest and the most wonderful and sensitive person. Listen to this story. He had a nephew named Michal. And one day he calls Michal, who's involved with so many wonderful things. He said, "I want you to come to my house right after you burn the chametz Erev Pesach." He said, "Uncle, but that's such a busy day. Is there any other day that I could come?" He says, "No, I need you right after you burn the chametz. I want you to come to my house." Okay, has no choice. The Gadol HaDor, his uncle. And he tells him he has to come to his house. So he comes to his house. Fine. He comes to his house after Bir Chametz. And Rav Shlomo Zalman has 10 envelopes. They're all addressed and sealed. He says, "Go deliver these 10 envelopes around Yerushalayim to the people that are marked on the envelope." Now this Michal, he was involved with a lot of tzedakas. He saw those names. He knew some of these people were very poor. He said, "Uncle, these people have money already. You know, it's Erev Pesach. So many people collected for them. Nobody's buying wine and matzahs and meat Erev Pesach. They have it already." He said, "Don't ask me any questions. Just go and deliver the envelopes and a guten yontif." Okay, he's got no choice. Fine. He goes and he starts delivering the envelopes. By the fifth one, the guy who he gave it to was so excited that this is from Rav Shlomo, he opened it up. And then Michal saw what was inside. He couldn't believe it. You know what was inside? There was some cash and tickets to the Gan HaChayot. Gan HaChayot is the biblical zoo, which many people go to. So he's thinking, what is going? Who gives tickets to the Gan HaChayot? Who's going to the zoo Erev Yontef? What was so important? Okay, but he still had other envelopes to give. He goes to the next house and he waits till the guy opens up the envelope. Sure enough, he opens up the envelope and there it is again. Cash and tickets to the Gan HaChayot, to the biblical zoo. Now he couldn't believe this, but he wasn't going to go Erev Yontef to ask his uncle. So Chol HaMoed, the first day Chol HaMoed, right after davening, he runs to his uncle's house. He said, "You got to explain this to me. What was so important about giving everybody tickets to the Gan HaChayot Erev Yontef?" Listen to what Rav Shlomo Zalman said. You'll see what a Leiv Tov is all about. He said, "I know the children of Yerushalayim. There are many poor children. They're going to come to shul the first day Pesach. On Yontef, they're going to speak to their friends. They say, 'Where are you going, Chol HaMoed? You got a family trip that's planned?'" So many kids whose parents could afford, you know, they're going some places. But a lot of kids have no place to go. And these kids will be so sad, they'll feel so cheated and so inferior that not only are they going to ruin their Yontef, they're going to go home and complain to their parents. They're going to ruin the Yontef of their parents. So I wanted to make sure that these poor families, that the children know they also have a chush of a place to go. That's what a Leif Tov is about. Who thinks about that? When was the last time when you go on vacation, you take somebody in your son or your daughter's class along with you? We used to do that all the time. All the time. I told all my children, every time we go on vacation, whether we went to Boston, whether we went to the Poconos, went to the home whack, one child could bring a friend that it will never get a chance to go. That's how you take a vacation. Because not everybody could afford what you could afford. And Baruch Hashem, they wish to bless you. You're able to go to wherever you're able to go. Take one child. You have to take the whole class. But you show your child, and I'll tell you something. When you do that, when your kids get married, they're going to do the exact same thing. I'm telling you. It's just amazing. I see it. I see it all the time. Those parents who did those type of things to include other children, when their children get married, they're including the other kids in their children's class. And that's a beautiful thing. That's really what a Leif Tov is all about. Here's something else, which is very, very important. And I want to tell you this story, even though that I don't come out looking so good in this story, but I think there's a very important lesson here. In Kew Gardens, many years ago, we had a guy who was in his early 30s. He was never not married. And I used to invite him for Shabbos many times. And he came and then he stopped coming. I didn't know why he stopped coming. And then Sukkot was coming and I called him up and I said, "You know, Sukkot is coming. Would you like to join us the first night of Sukkot? It'll be so beautiful." He said, "Okay, I'll come." And he came and we had the Suda. It was very beautiful. He was a bright guy, a lot of Divrei Torah. It was wonderful. After the Suda, nobody was in the Sukkah except me and him. So I said to him, "You know, can I ask you something if you don't mind?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "You know, you always used to come to my house Friday night. And then you stopped coming. Why'd you stop coming?" And he says to me, "You really want to know?" Now, when a guy says to you, "You really want to know," you're in for it. You know it. But, you know, I asked him. So I wanted to hear. I said, "Yeah, okay, tell me." He said, "Okay, let's go out of the sukkah." So we go out of the sukkah. We start walking down the driveway. And he starts yelling at me, "What chutzpah do you have to invite me Friday night when you see me in shul? Or what chutzpah do you have to invite me Thursday night? You don't think by Tuesday or Wednesday I prepared for Shabbos? You don't think I know Shabbos is coming? I got chalas. I bought shalt. I don't make it myself, but I bought. What am I, your chayfet shel mitzvah? If you cared about me, you'd invite me on Monday." And the truth is, he was so right. You can't invite somebody the last minute as if they're an oni, as if they're an unfortunate case. Now's the time to invite for Shavuos. There are so many single parents. No parent should be sitting alone with their children on Yom Tov if you could avoid it. Now's the time this week. Call them up, invite them for a meal, whether at night or in the morning, in the afternoon, whatever you do, but now's the time. It shows that you thought about them. Not that they were just a last minute thought on the Rachmanis case. And we know in every community there's single men, single women sitting with children. I'll tell you one of the most heartbreaking stories. I have a dear friend who's a therapist. I don't know why all my friends are therapists, but whatever. His name is Yaakov Solomon. He told me this sad story. He said there was a 22-year-old girl that was in his office once. And she said to him that it was the second night of Shavuos and she didn't have an invitation. And now she was in her own apartment in a basement someplace and she was going to have the suda alone and she didn't remember the halacha if you're supposed to make Shachiyano on the second night of Sukkot, on the second night of Shavuos. And she was thinking, what is the halacha? I can't go to the next door neighbor and ask them, then it'll be obvious that I'm looking for an invitation. And then she said to herself, and this is what she said to Yaakov Solomon, and it's so sad. She said, then it occurred to me, even if I'm supposed to make Shachiyano, do I really want to make Shachiyano? Is this what I'm waiting for, to be a single girl, an older girl? She was older than 22. Probably more like 28 or 29. Is this what I'm waiting for? No single person should have to eat alone. Now, if they want to eat alone, if a family wants to eat alone, then you have to give them their space. You don't insist. But now's the time to think about it. A week and a half before Yom Tov, that's what a Lev Tov is all about. Now, I think that we should follow the lead of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim tells us something absolutely incredible. And he tells us, and this is in Sefer Avos Chesed, Perek Yud Beis, Uma'oid, Tzorech Lizoyer, a person has to be careful. Shalayech Saloy Midas HaChesed Afilu Yoyim Echad. You should not go. If you can still do a favor for somebody tonight, that's great. I'm not talking a husband for a wife for a husband. That you got to do if you know what's good for you. I'm talking out of the house. And then people say, oh, doesn't charity begin at home? Yeah, of course charity begins at home. But that's not how you become a Baal Chesed, by being nice to your spouse. That's how you keep a good marriage going. But you want to become a Baal Chesed? Think about those people who have less than you. Think about those people that you can do something for. Every day you should do a Chesed, and every day you should learn something, men and women. Obviously, women are not going to learn Gemara, but you can learn Musar. You can learn Chumash. You can learn Tanakh. You can read a Magid book. You can read something that's inspirational. Every day you can learn something. Not one day should go by without your learning something, and not one day should go by without doing a chesed. And I want to tell you something. Now, I know this is going all over the whole world. I would never, ever have the courage to say this, except I'm quoting from the Avos Chesed, again, the Chofetz Chaim, Chelek Sheni, Perek Dalet, what he says is frightening mamish. Kisha osak b'toyra bilvad. If somebody is only learning Torah, and he doesn't do chesed the way he's supposed to, then he's not going to get favors from Hashem in this world. Somebody who learns Torah all the time will get a straight ticket to Elam Haba. Yeah, that's true, but what about in this world? All of us need Hashem's chesed in health, in finances, in mazel, in everything that we do. You want chesed, you got to do chesed. That's what the Chofetz Chaim is telling us. The greatest investment that we can do is do favors for other people. Stop thinking only about yourself. And this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tzadikhes. The Talmidim asked Rabbi Elazar, what should we do so we should be saved from the pangs of Mashiach? And the Gemara answers, Yasek B'Toyra or Gemilas Chasodim. Every day, you got to do a favor for somebody. Every day, you got to learn something. That's how you're going to be saved. And that's the Kabbalah as we get to Kabbalah Satoyra. Those days, as we said, we're trying to reach the top of the mountain. Let's get used to doing a chesed every day. Let's get used to learning every day. And if this becomes our way of acting every day, oh, then we could say Shachiyano on Shavuos. Then we've reached the top of the mountain. That's what it's all about. Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah, Lev Tov, 49 days, counting without Shachiyano, and then we get to the top, and then we can count. Let me tell you an amazing thing. It's so unbelievable. I was talking to Mrs. Kassira who drove me here, and I thank you. You could write it down. You drove me here. Thank you. But listen to this. how Yidden come up with ideas of chesed, it's just not normal. I was at a Torah Sar convention a few weeks ago. So I met a person, he tells me about his bubby who lives in Washington Heights, Mrs. Rita Slamowitz. I happen to know her for many, many years. So she's close to 90, and one of her friends, her husband passed away. He was also 90. And she went to be Menachem Avil. Now, as she's sitting and talking to this almana, she was there alone with her, all of a sudden a young couple from Borough Park comes in. And the lady who was the almana, she never had no children. And her husband had a brother and sister, but they had already died. So she didn't know these people. But, you know, she got into a conversation. They came to her in Nachum Avil. And then she says to him, excuse me, I want to ask you a question. I hope you don't mind. You know, I don't know you. Did you know my husband? So they said, no. So she said, excuse me, you know, you don't know me. And you didn't know my husband. Like, what are you doing here? Listen to what they said. You could go crazy from this. They said, every day we go on the list on Yeshiva World and we look at Misaskim. If we see anybody that's sitting Shiva alone, we go to be Menachem Avil. Could you imagine a chesed? That's unbelievable. Who would ever think of that? A poor woman is sitting alone, 90 years old. Who thinks about them? Or sometimes you have somebody who's got a big family, but they're in Australia. Or they're very far, and this person's got to be in America for whatever reason. And they're sitting alone. And these people, they're going on the Misaskim list. I'm telling you, I never heard of anybody going on a Misaskim list. I know some people read the obituary every day to see if they're not there. They just want to be sure they're not there. But otherwise, who looks at a Misaskim list if you're not going to go be Menachem Avil somewhere? Here's another thing. I can't get over this. Mika Amcha Yisrael. A few weeks ago, I had a bris on Shabbos in Suffern, New York. Suffern is near Muncie. So I come into the shul Friday night. Now, I don't know, you know, most of the people in the shul. And, you know, when you come into a shul, you don't want to sit in somebody's place. It's a mokum kavua. Everybody has their own place to daven. You don't want to make, you know, somebody have to, you know, should ask you to move. It's a very big inyan to daven in the same place all the time. So I'm just like shuffling around, seeing where there's an empty place. And a guy comes up to me and says, Rabbi, we have a table here for guests. So I said, oh, wow. Like I'm looking in the back of the shul. It's probably that's where it is. No. It's right over here. It was amazing. Right behind the Baal Tefillah, there was a table with five seats. You could sit there, all the guests, right up front. Wow, that's a nice idea. Go on, we got to start that. Now listen to this. You wouldn't believe it. A few minutes later, a guy comes over to me with a table stender. I said, excuse me. You know, you're so kind, you gave me a seat, but I don't want to take your stender. He said, no, it's not mine, it's yours. I said, it's mine? He said, yeah, take a look. I took a look. You know what it said on top of that table stender? Our guest. You go crazy from that. Who thinks about that? It's unbelievable. Imagine you make a person feel so comfortable. Who knows when you're going to see that person? Who knows when they're going to come again? But here you give him a table. He's got a guest table up front and a stender that says, our guest. Many Schwab thought of the idea. Unbelievable. That's what Klal Yisrael is about. Now, you want to hear something that happened in our shul? Golan can tell you. It's amazing. Just absolutely incredible. We have a guy in our shul in Kew Gardens. Only a guy from England could have such a name, Nigel. Nigel Collins, okay? Now, all of us here, every single one of us is blessed with certain talents. So he's blessed with a talent. He's a great photographer. Now, in our shul on Purim, there are many, many shuls throughout the world that have this. It's called Yeshivas Mordechai HaTzadik. And what happens is that an hour before Mincha, every kid gets dressed up like Trump and Obama and Clinton, everybody, Ahasuerus, Vashti, whatever you want, like a frigid, I don't know. They're all dressed up like something, right? And they learn with their fathers or grandfathers for a while before Mincha, and then there's Mincha, and right after Mincha, all the kids with all the wild costumes, they just line up, and they come up to the Rav, Rav Shlomo Tannenbaum, Zazang Gesund, and he gives them money, Purim Geld. That's a very, very nice thing. All the kids look forward to it. What does Nigel do? Nobody asked him. He stands right next to where Avshalema Teitelbaum is, and he takes a picture, he takes two pictures of every kid in those crazy costumes as Rav Shlomo Tannenbaum is giving money. And you know something? By the time we all came home from our Purim Suda, everybody had an email with their kids' picture on the roof. Did anybody ask him to do it? Of course not. And is anybody going to save somebody else's kid's picture? No. But you got your own kid's picture. And what happened if the father or grandfather couldn't be there that day? The mother's not coming up to get the money from Shlomo Tannenbaum. So how's she going to get a picture of her kid with the roof? Such a rare picture, such a nice picture with the costumes. The answer is somebody's thinking. That's what chesed is all about. Chesed is thinking out of the box. Chesed is doing those things that nobody would think of. So I got to tell you this thing. And if anybody wants, you can call me afterwards and you give me your email. I'll make sure that you get these recordings. Three times a week, I make a recording about the importance of doing a chesed. There's no charge for it whatsoever. Yeshiva Teres Shimon sends it out three times a week. So anytime that I hear like these ideas of chesed, you know, it's only a two-minute recording. But every time when I see a word of chesed in a pasuk, or if I see a chazal about chesed, I'm always trying to think, what could I do something new? Or what could I think of a new pshat? Listen to this pshat that somebody, Baruch Klein from Far Rockaway, told me a few weeks ago. You could go crazy. There's a very famous pasuk in Perek Chav Gimel in Tillim. Ach toi v'chesed yedafuni kol yemei chayai. Only good and chesed should run after me. What do you mean run after me? I should run after chesed, right? Not chesed should run after me. What does that mean? Ach toi v'chesed yedafuni. Listen to this pshat. Ach. How much is the word ach equal to? Good. Tell me. Ach is aleph, is one. Chav is 20. 21, right? So ach is equal 21. So this guy, Baruch Klein, says like this. There's 21% of oxygen in the air. If there would be more than 21% oxygen in the air, we would all burn up. If there would be less than 21% of oxygen in the air, we would all choke to death. Ach, that 21% oxygen, that chesed that Hashem gives us, that 21% oxygen in the air, Yidufuni is running after us no matter where we are. You're in Iceland or you're in the Sahara Desert, hot, cold, that 21% is running after you. Kol yemei chayai. All your life, that's how you're able to live. So no matter where you are, Hashem's running after you with 21% oxygen. Isn't that a great chesed that Hashem does for us? Shouldn't we be so grateful to Him that He gives us life? Baruch Hashem here, there's nobody here on a respirator. We're all breathing 21% oxygen constantly, no matter where we are. So that's a great chesed. So of course we owe chesed to Hashem's children in return. I want to tell you something. Shavuos is not only learning Torah, Shavuos is doing mitzvahs. And I want to show you something, what it means when you have a love of a mitzvah. Because when you have a love of a mitzvah, your children see that. You don't even have to teach it to them. They see how you hold that sitter. They see how you go up to kiss the Sefer Torah. So I want to tell you a great story. As I told you, my mother and I were very close. She was Nebuchadnezzar Almana for 40 long years. And I have a wonderful wife. The furthest that we ever lived away from my mother was two blocks. And we were very close. There was nothing that I couldn't speak to my mother about. All my writing, I only got the talent only from her. And we had conversations about every topic under the sun. So I thought that there's nothing that anybody could tell me about my mother that I didn't know. Last year before Pesach, my nephew, Rabbi Yehuda Gutman, who lives in Lakewood, calls me up and he says, Uncle Pesach, I want to tell you something about your mother that you don't know. I said, Hoodie, it's ridiculous. There's nothing that I don't know about my mother. He says, I'm telling you, I was the only one that was there. It was the last day of her life. And I never told it to you because I never understood it. I said, Hoodie, what are you talking about? Listen to this. She passed away at the beginning of Chol HaMoed Sukkot. So the last day of her life was the second day of Sukkot. So Hoodie tells me she was in the hospital, Paul Kimball Hospital in Lakewood. And Hoodie was with her. She wasn't responding. She was just lying in bed. And he took the lulav and esrog and he said to her, Bubby, would you like to shake the lulav and esrog? And she didn't respond. So he said to her, Bubby, I have the lulav and esrog right here. I'll make the bracha. Let's do it together and we'll do the mitzvah. So he took her hands and he wrapped it around the lulav and the esrog and he put his fingers around her fingers and he said the bracha out loud and they shook the lulav, he shook the lulav and the esrog in all the directions. He didn't know if she said the bracha. He didn't think she made the bracha. He wasn't sure if she even knew what was going on. But after he finished doing the mitzvah, he wanted to take the lulav and the esrog from her. And she wouldn't give it to him. She was holding on to it very tight. So he said to her, Bubby, we did the mitzvah already. But she didn't give it to him. So he figured, okay, listen, for whatever reason, she wants to hold on to it, he'll take away his fingers, let her hold on to it. So he takes away his fingers, she's holding on to it. When she's holding on to it alone, she takes it to her lips, she kisses the lulav, she kisses the esrog, and she gives it back to him. He could not believe it. So obviously she knew what was going on. Obviously she understood that there was a mitzvah here going on. He said, I never told you about it because I could not understand why she did that, where she got that from. He said, this year I was teaching, he was teaching in Edison, New Jersey, and he taught in Hilchos Afikoman, as you'll see in a second. Anybody who wants to look it up, it's Simon Tov, Ayin Zayin, Sifkot and Aleph and the Behedev, and the Mishnah Berurah brings it as well. Listen to this. Kosav Shlo HaKadosh. The Shlo HaKadosh writes, Ra'isi, I saw, Mibnei Aliyah, from the higher elevated people, Shehayu Menashkin HaMatzos, they used to kiss the matzahs. I never in my life kissed a matzah till last year in the Seder. Me and all my kids and grandchildren all kissing matzahs. And the morah. I can't say I kissed the morah. V'chein sukkah. And the sukkah. B'chnisosa yubitziyosa. When you walk in the sukkah, walk out of the sukkah. Just like you kiss the mezuzah, you kiss the wall of the sukkah. V'chein dalad minim shabalulav. And the dalad minim of the lulav. Why? V'hakol l'chavoy v'hamitzvah. To show how much you love the mitzvah. V'ashrei misha'ovir Hashem b'simcha. Fortunate are those who serve Hashem with happiness. That's what it's about. The last day of her life, my mother taught me something. I wasn't even there, but I learned it from my nephew. And I've told it to thousands of people. Because it is so amazing that this mitzvah became so ingrained in her. I always kissed the lulav and esrog. I had no idea why, so my mother did it, so I did it. You think she knew this Behetev? I guarantee you she never saw it. You think she knew the Mishnah Berurah? She never saw the Mishnah Berurah. But in her gut, she loved mitzvahs. In her gut, the way she kissed the tilim after she said the tilim, you knew that that was the most precious thing to her in the world. That's how you have to treat a sefer. That's how you have to treat a mitzvah. Any mitzvah that we do, you have to treat it with love and excitement. You bake challah, call all the kids together, and you bake challah together. You're delivering Temche Shabbos, you're cooking for a Shalom Zachar, whatever you're doing, get all the kids involved. Make them feel special. It's part of the mitzvah. They're decorating the sukkah. What, no matter what that decoration looks like. Some hang it upside down. Who cares? But it's theirs. And they're proud of it. And that's what Kabbalah Satira is. It's not only Kabbalah Satira, but it's a love of mitzvahs. And then as we get higher and get to love the mitzvahs, we become different type of people. So I just want to end just with this thing we'll review and end with a fabulous, fabulous story. In the Syrian community, by the Suda, after the Bris, there's a certain song that they sing. Now, I don't know why it was hanging in Rav Tarabam Shul for many, many years in the old shul, before we moved to the new building. Right by the Baal Tefillah, there was like a plaque, and it had this poem in it. Listen to this poem. Ben Adam, mankind. Lama tidag al hadamim. Why are you worried about your money? And you're not worried about your days. In the long run, money's not going to make you happy. That's not what helps you out at the end. And the days that are gone, they never come back. That's why the Sfasemis had Arichas Yomim. He didn't let one day go by without doing something special. A chesed, learning something. But if you let a day go by, it's never, ever coming back. Redoif acha ha-Torah va-mitzvahs. Run after Torah mitzvahs asher heim la'ad kayamim. That's what exists forever. So let's review everything that we said, and we'll end with this fabulous story. Let's remember, we all come together in a time of growth. Between Pesach and Shavuos, that's why we don't say Shechiyonu, because we want to say Shechiyonu once we've reached those 49 days, which is the Lev Toiv. Once we've reached that Derech Eretz Kodma la-Torah. Let's remember, let's be like Rabbi Akiva. Nothing bad should happen to anyone. But if something bad happens, never be broken. You could be discouraged, but you pick yourself off the floor, you finish crying, and then you build. You build, just like Rabbi Akiva. And if you see something terrible happened, take a look at the good part of it. The fox on the Beis HaMikdash, but that means that the children are going to be running around the Yerushalayim. You got to be positive. You got to have that Lev Tov like Abshalem Zalman. You got to have that Lev Tov like Mr. Israel and Mr. Lewinstein. We have to remember, do a chesed every day. That's what the Chofetz Chaim tells us. Learn Torah every single day. I'm not saying that from now on we should go be Menachem Mobile, those people that are sitting alone, but let's think out of the box. Let's think about those people that are going to be alone on Yom Tov. Invite them now. Now is the time to invite. Let's remember to be welcoming to a guest in such a beautiful way as they do it in Rabbi Chester's shul in Suffern. Let's remember the chesed that Nigel Collins did with his camera. All of us have different talents. Some can bake, some can cook, some can teach, some can tutor, whatever you can do. Take time out for a child that needs it and give to them. Let's remember that beautiful word, Ach Toi V'Chesed Yudafuni, Hashem runs after us with that 21% of oxygen. Let's remember the Ber Heitev, to kiss and to love the mitzvahs and be so proud that we're Yidden. And when we kiss and we love the mitzvahs, that's how our children are going to do the exact same thing. And let's remember that great Syrian poem. You know, one of the things that I think that elevates us as Yidden is that we always look for stories of Hashgacha Pratis. Hashgacha Pratis means that Hashem is orchestrating every single thing. The big things, the little things. I remember recently, I had to speak for a very large olam about Simchas HaChaim. And one of the things that I spoke about is the Bracha Asher Yotzar. Now, you know what I told them? Something that you would not think about normally. You know what is written in the Siddur HaGra? The only bracha that we mentioned, the Kisei HaKovit, the highest level, is the Bracha Shayotza. All of you do it. Kisei Kavoidecha. What do you mean Kisei Kavoidecha? When somebody's using the bathroom, he goes out and he talks about the Kisei HaKovit. We don't say the Kisei HaKovit, but we're blowing shofar, or when we're reading the Megillah or eating matzah. What's going on? And you know what the Goyen says? You wouldn't believe. That's to show you that every little thing that a person is involved in, Hashem is there, even bodily functions. And when you understand that, and you realize that Hashem is here in every little thing that happens, all of a sudden you know that Hashem loves us, and that He's there with us, and everything that happens, happens for a reason. So I want to end with this great story that happened in Kew Gardens just a few weeks ago. All of us certainly remember that before Purim, there was a big snowstorm. And many of us couldn't get out to do the Shalach Manis that we wanted to give because there was so much snow on the ground. So in our neighborhood, there was no garbage collection, except a couple days later, in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, many of you know Rav Kalman Epstein. He's a very big Talmud Chacham. He was sitting and learning at night in his house. And he hears the sanitation department. Now, they hadn't come in 3 days. He had a lot of garbage in his house. So he's a Rosh Hashiva, but still he picked up the garbage and he runs outside, right? And he sees, you know, a bunch of sanitation guys. He says, "Here, do you mind, gentlemen, if you could take this?" And this guy, Theodore, whose nickname is Pip, P-I-P, I don't know why, but that's his nickname. And he takes the garbage. He says, "Yeah, I'll take it for you." And then he says, "Excuse me, sir, are you a rabbi?" Kalman Epstein wasn't expecting that. And he says, "Yeah, I'm a rabbi." He said, "Can I ask you a question?" 2 o'clock in the morning, he takes out his garbage. The guy's asking him shilas. So he says, "Rabbi, I just want to tell you, you know, my mother died a few hours ago. And I didn't even tell my brother and sister yet about that. Because they want to cremate her. They don't want her to have a Jewish burial. And I know my mother used to light candles Friday night. She wasn't so religious, but she would want a Jewish burial. I don't know what to do if I tell them. They're not going to want to have a Jewish funeral. Rabbi, what should I do?" So Rabbi Kalman Epstein thinks for a moment. He said, "I'll tell you what to do." He said, "Tomorrow morning, call a Jewish funeral home and arrange the whole funeral. And after everything is set, call up your brother and sister and say, 'You know what? Mom died. The funeral's in a few hours. Make sure you get here.'" He said, "Wow, I didn't think of that." That's exactly what he did. The next morning, he calls a Jewish funeral home. The arrangements are made. He calls his brother and sister, and they're okay with it. He calls Rav Kalman Epstein, and he says, "You know, Rabbi, you were right. It's amazing. I arranged a funeral, and I told them to come, and they're all going to be there." He says, Rabbi, you're the only rabbi I know. You think you could speak at the funeral? Imagine that. And Colin Epstein says, yes, he'll be there. Imagine that. He doesn't even know the guy from the hole in the wall. Or hole in the garbage can. Right? He doesn't even know. He's going to the funeral. And listen to what he said. Amazing. He told me. He said, people reap in death what they sow in life. Your mother had a feeling for Judaism. She lit candles every Friday night. So God orchestrated in such a way that Theodore should come and that he should see me and we should be able to arrange a funeral. So she has a Jewish funeral because she sowed a love of Judaism in her life, and that's why God rewarded her. Now listen to this. He left the funeral. He had to go to Lakewood. He didn't go to the burial. And the next day, this is so amazing, he went from Lakewood to Islip, Long Island. You know what Islip is? It's 115 miles from Lakewood to go be Menachem Avil. Now, he told the guy to sit Shiva. The guy wasn't sitting Shiva, but he was home from work. He still went to see him. 115 miles. Fine. A week or two later, Colin Epstein is home, and he hears the sanitation people. It's in the afternoon. He hears them. So he wants to run outside, you know, to see Theodore, you know, ask him how he's doing. So he comes outside. He says, excuse me, is Theodore here? They said, who? And Theodore, you know, he doesn't work here. What do you mean he doesn't work here? He was here 2 weeks ago in the middle of the snow. No, that's the only time he ever comes to Queens. He never comes to Queens. He's always in Suffolk County. We needed overtime, so he came that night. Imagine that. You could go crazy from that. It's the only time this guy ever comes to work in Queens. And like this, his mother has a funeral, a Jewish funeral. That's Dashka HaPratis. Hashem pays back every little thing that you do. And when we see these things, we should be so elevated. We should be so excited. We come to the holy days of Shavuos. And we're going to get that Derech Eretz Kodmah LaTorah. We're going to get that Lev Tov. Oh, then we can say Shachiyano with so much pride when we come to Shachiyano, when we come to Shavuos. There's no better school than Tiferes Moshe. We all know that. We all thank Rabbi Yaakov Meir. He works day and night. There's no way that we can thank him enough. And all the great Rebbeim, some of them that are here, some of them that are home. But we thank everyone, Rabbi Welcher, everybody that's involved in the yeshiva. You should continue your great work and be Marbitz Taylor, the Rabbim, all of us, our nachas from our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And we all should be zeicha to our wonderful, wonderful Yontif. Thank you for inviting me. And thank you for listening. Thank you. We got to the mountain.
Before we leave, I just want to Sogrim Bekovet Achsanya. We heard a speech about Avish Yisrael in the Mokum of Avish Yisrael. Thank you so much. And boys, think about it. We'll talk about it. We have a discussion every single day what we heard here. We'll take it with an afternoon.
Good. Thank you. And all those boys that I promised CDs come up here.